Welcome to the Travelling Tribes podcast, the latest insight into group travel and tourism trends. Host Jeff Gader, publisher of Leisure Group Travel Magazine and author of Travelling Tribes, interviews travel industry standouts and influencers for an engaging conversation about group travel.
Hello, everybody. Jeff Gadek here with the Traveling Tribes podcast. Thanks for joining us today and happy to have with us a very special guest, Tim Kynes. How are you doing today, Tim?
I'm doing just well, my friend. Thanks so much for having me here.
It's great to talk to a professional podcaster because I can just tell the quality of your audio is superior compared. Yeah, I talk to a different variety of people. Some are on their cell phones, others might be on a landline, but you have the whole safe room set up in your house. So I really appreciate that. I know I've got a pro in front of me.
Yeah, I took the time to turn a closet into a safe room or podcast studio, whatever you want to call it. So I've got some padded walls in here and a decent microphone. Hopefully it stays decent. But yeah, seems to be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm super excited to talk with you and learn more about your background. You and I initially connected at the IITA, International Inbound Travel Association Summit in Memphis in February, and you were the speaker on AI, which pretty big audience, as you can imagine. It's on a lot of people's radar these days, deservedly so. So I want to talk about that. But subsequent to that, I learned a bit about your background. So why don't you start and just, you know, to talk about sort of your path to what's got you to this point, and then we can break into some Q&A.
Yeah, sure. That sounds great. And if I go too long, please just throw up the stop sign because
I'll give you the old neck cut sign, Tim. Don't worry.
I want this to be about your audience and about the topic as opposed to being self-serving. But yeah, I mean, my background is actually in marketing. So I'm a professional marketer by trade. I've been doing marketing for over 20 years. Most of what I do is on the fractional CMO front. So I work. That's glorified work of part-time, if you want to call it that. So whether it's project basis or limited basis on hours, I work with companies to kind of help them write their marketing ship. So my specialty is really digging into companies that are struggling or false starting with their marketing. My goal is to try to help get marketing jump-started. The name of my company is called the Marketing Starter Group. So we're all about getting marketing started and getting it running to allow you to kind of take it to the finish line. So that's what I specialize in from the consulting and marketing front. Most of my career has been in the technology sector, but it has intersected into the travel world quite a bit. I had my own travel startup. It was a events and social gathering type of company where I brought business travelers together. I started that in Chicago. Like 14 years ago is when I had kicked that off. And so I joined my local GBTA and started going to those conferences. So I got my first foray into travel in the business travel side and have since kind of grown and expanded that into leisure and tours and also in the meetings and events side of the business, because they all kind of live and breathe off of travel, which I'm passionate about. So I have a couple of companies I work with today are B2B SaaS and service businesses, but are in the travel space. So if you're in that area, that's who I think I add the most value for. But yeah, I like to step in and kind of lead the marketing direction and help people help steer them in the right place.
And I can immediately see the value in what you do from the standpoint is either you're probably dealing with owner operators or maybe you've got some outside funding coming in. And yeah, I know we face this all the time in our sectors is, you know, we're used to telling the same story because we know the product very well, but we don't know how well that's resonating with an audience. Yeah. So it gets frustrating because it's like, well, why isn't everybody buying from us? We know this is a great product and, you know, we're passionate about it. And it could just be that we don't have the story down or we're not communicating in the right channels. Right. Do you see that a lot in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of, I almost call it Kleenex-ifying or commoditizing of the industry. And when I say Kleenex-ifying or Coca-Cola-ifying, where it's like, hey, can I get a Kleenex for my nose? They're like, yeah, I have puff. Or I have this brand, but that brand itself has become just synonymous with the object that it is. Same thing with Coke, at least down here in the South where I live. You say, hey, can I get a Coke? And they say, yeah, what flavor? And you say Sprite.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
it's that kind of thing. And you know, I see that a lot in travel. It's like, what are those things that truly set you apart? You know, everyone claims to have stellar customer service. Everyone claims to have the best tour. Everyone claims to have the comfiest beds if you're in the hotel. Sure, but what are those things that really set you apart? And the thing that I try to push hard on for my clients is leaning into that brand experience, and then also tying it back to the reason why you exist, why you made this business in the first place, needs to be clearly trickled down from your founding team, owner operator team, whatever you want to call it, into the marketing messaging, because people are ultimately going to do business with people who they trust, who they like, who they believe, who share the same kind of worldview. And maybe one tour operator has a slightly different way of spinning that than another one. And so maybe that's why I would choose one over the other. So that, I think that's a really important piece of this.
Yeah, I think that's a great testament to sort of how to maybe rearrange your thought philosophy in regards to your company if you get a little bit close to it, a little bit too close to it, I should say. One thing that I see a lot of is sort of chasing the shiny ball. Many companies do that, and you know, we all get newsletters in, and we're active on social media, and we go to conferences, and you know, new ideas are hatched. And, you know, while I think we need to be cognizant of what's out there with new technology and different ways of doing business, that can become a very vicious cycle. How do you see that playing out in a lot of organizations? Or, you know, should we continue to do that, or how do we avoid it?
Well, I think it's totally okay to do it if you have the bandwidth to do it. And that was one of the things I talked about in my speech at IITA was AI, and we'll get to that specifically in a minute, but AI is just another one of those shiny objects like you're talking about. You know, social media was it, right? Oh my gosh, Facebook, and we got to have a Facebook page, and we got to be on, have this profile and that profile. Okay, well, you develop all these profiles and you don't keep the content flowing, you don't have someone to manage it, what good is it? It was better to not do it than to do it incorrectly. So it's the same thing with AI. That's just the current new hotness on the block. 2 years from now, it's 5 years from now, it'll be another thing. And so my heat of caution on that is go, okay, yeah, hey, there's a lot of cool things we could do, but do I have the bandwidth to bring this into my operation? And if you don't have the bandwidth to bring in your operation or bring it into your operation well, then that's where you kind of pump the brakes a little bit and go, okay, how can I dabble in this without distracting me away from serving my customers and growing my business?
Yeah. I tell my staff, it's always easy to start something, but do we have the bandwidth to keep it up? You know, we can start a new Facebook community group for Name the Market, and we could put a good 2 weeks of solid effort into it, and then we get super busy with production, and that just is another thing that we're spinning wheels on.
Yep. Yeah. So don't get caught in the mud spinning your wheels on something when you don't have the infrastructure to support it.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you come upon the concept of, you know, fractional CMO work within the travel industry? Obviously, it's not a revolutionary idea per se, but, you know, what kind of got you to that point in the industry? How did you make that breakthrough?
Well, it comes from more of a personal story of just having this kind of a wild roller coaster tenure over the 20 years I've been doing marketing, where I have been laid off, had to career transition 6 different times in 20 years. So if you do the math and divide that across, that's not a lot of tenure at companies. And so I've had to adapt to that. I don't know what this, if I have some tattoo back or something that like is, I've been branded this, unfortunately, from my experience. Not exactly sure why, but it is a circumstance I find myself in. And so as of recent, I started doing consulting and stuff a few years ago, and then had taken was convinced to take another full-time role with a client. But then as of recent, into late 2023 into 2024 here, been really focusing on standing up that business and honing in on where I drive the most value. And getting into this fractional thing, which I'm so glad we're talking about it, because I feel like a lot of people don't understand what it is or how it fits into their organization. Just like any current status quo, people are like, oh, well, I need a full-time CMO on my team to help us get here. Well, in the volatile, tough to chase marketing environment where we're chasing a lot of these shiny objects, that's led to one of the shortest tenures out of any professional in the C-suite. CMOs have the shortest, and then
really?
Usually revenue people or salespeople after that. Yeah, CMOs usually make it like a year and a half, 2 years max. And part of that is like the ability for CMOs to market themselves and set expectations and blah, 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 a lot of things. But it's basically comes down to an expectation alignment between them and then also the rest of the executive team. If they, you know, they don't start seeing results right away, they go, well, sales is keeping the lights on. Let's kick marketing out. So, and also marketing itself is expensive. And this type of professional is expensive. Like I wasn't cheap at my mm-hmm. last role, right? I had a great seller, very blessed, thankful for that. So what this fractional CMO thing allows for is allows for these companies that are trying to grow, trying to get a foothold in marketing, need that expertise from a seasoned leader, but they don't necessarily want to pay them $200,000 plus a year, or maybe they need them for 40 hours a week, months while they're working on a completely new go-to-market strategy or entering in a new market or overcoming some other great marketing challenge, name it, messaging, right? Maybe they only need them for that amount of time, and then they can go back and rely on their more junior marketing staff to continue it. Or they can have their junior marketing staff help supplement this part-time CMO that we might have for 5 hours a week. And so it's a way of getting the high-priced talent without the high-priced tag, which I think is awesome. And then in turn, it allows leaders like me to focus on the things that we like to do best, not necessarily have to get too into the weeds of the company bureaucracy, but still be able to represent the company and still do great things. So I think it's like a perfect intersection. And I see a lot of fractional CMOs out there. I was reading that the CMO job openings like on LinkedIn, have CMO postings are down, but fractional is up over 200% over the last year or so. A lot of companies are kind of seeing this turning of the tide and going, oh, wow, yeah, this actually might work better. And it works, I think, with the people who are like me, who are looking for that lifestyle as well.
I like that idea really as a hired gun. And you talked about the average tenure of a CMO, a year and a half to 2 years. If you're bringing on a CMO and perhaps they're bringing on staff members, because sometimes they travel in packs, that could be very disruptive on an organization. Whereas if you feel you have a good team in place, but you can bring somebody in who can provide the vision, because it's different characteristics, some that are very functional in their job tasks versus the big picture. That could be a nice bridge, and the savings too with many companies could be beneficial as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's really a best of both worlds kind of situation. And yeah, you do see a lot of marketers, to your point, who like to bring in their crew and do like a clean house. And one of the things that is just nails on a chalkboard to me is when marketers do that. And I think it's great to bring in people you know and trust, but why shake things up and create more work for yourself when the company may already have great resources in place already? That's one thing that I do. I've come in and I've talked to CEOs and they're like, yeah, well, we use this agency or we have this website person or we have that, but we can get rid of them. Let's see if we can get the juice, squeeze all the juice out of these before we go down. Like, we don't have to just ask somebody because maybe you think they're not performing to the level, they just haven't had the marketing direction, and then all of a sudden, boom, they're great. And we didn't have to go through the exercise of vetting and spending time and resources doing that, which is also part of why this fractional thing is great at the CMO level too, because just even hiring one takes time, onboarding them takes time. And if you can keep things light and interim or part or whatever you want to call it, it makes it so much easier to ebb and flow and not cost the business so much opportunity.
Yeah, because you can make a few steps backwards, and in a super competitive environment today, there's just so many people that are after the consumer almighty dollar that could be fatal for many organizations. So very, very cool. So, So, as I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, you and I met through a presentation that you did on artificial intelligence. And, you know, obviously there's a lot that's being talked about on that topic, but I think you had a pretty unique perspective on it, and it certainly caught my attention. And I thought that as we gathered for this conversation, I could ask you some questions about AI. And as I typically do, I prepare for these conversations. And so I was driving notes, I'm thinking, well, who better to ask questions about AI, would it be me? And I know a fair amount about it. We use different tools in our office. Or why don't I just ask ChatGTP to ask you some questions? So if you don't mind, ChatGTP has a couple of questions for you on artificial intelligence
me
and the travel.
The robot?
Absolutely.
The robot?
I think he can handle it. But if you don't mind, I've got a few questions that it would like to ask you.
All right.
Okay, so question number one is, can you provide an overview about how AI is currently being utilized best within the travel industry?
Yes. So, I mean, the travel industry piece is it's a broad question, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a million different ways that it's being used within the varying segments. Like, right, we met at the tour operators meeting, and then there's other suppliers and all over the place. So when I'm thinking about AI is I look to speed, right? I mentioned this in my talk. It's like a can of Red Bull. It's adding to your operational efficiencies, your marketing efficiencies, your ability to get things done faster. So on the business side of it, right? Whether you're using ChatGPT to develop questions like the ones you're asking me, you're using it to help you do lead sourcing and using it to data crunch or whatever. There's a lot of things you could be using for on the operational side. Then on like the consumer side of it, one of the great examples that I showed, but not a perfect example in my talk, was where they were NBC News had a segment where they had different AI travel apps that were giving them recommendations, like helping them book tickets, telling them where to go and different things while they were touring. I believe it was Rome in that example. And it had its faults. It was telling people to go to the Colosseum at like 2 a.m. to beat the crowds, which it's not open at 2 a.m., right? So there are some things that it's not perfect at. But I would say for operational efficiency and speeding up processes on the business side, and then recommendations on the traveler side.
Okay. The next question AI has for you is, how do you foresee this technology evolving and shaping different travel experiences? You know, you mentioned the issue of, you know, certainly there's no crowds at the Colosseum at 2 a.m. There's also nobody there to show you around. So, how do we think this is going to evolve?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to continue to get smarter and smarter. The issue that AI has and will forever have is it relies on a thing that we call collaborative intelligence, which is humans helping the machines and the machines helping humans. And it's a cycle and it goes around and around and around. But it has to start with that human knowledge and that human input. And in the example of the Colosseum not being open, AI is going and looking at the internet and what information that exists in order to compile that and give that recommendation. But in a country like Italy, that's still very old school, like you have those little cafes and restaurants that may not even have a website, how will AI know what's on the menu and what to mm-hmm. recommend for you? It won't know. So it's going to evolve and take more time as the data catches up. There will always be a data lag that's reliant on the humans to make it better. And so I think we'll just continue to see more and more refinement, and it'll continue to get better and better. But I don't see it taking over the world and trying to kill us all, if anyone's worried about that.
There are definitely some that are worried about that. Yes.
I know. Yeah.
So aside from it taking over the world, the next question that ChatGTP has for us is, what potential challenges or ethical considerations should the travel industry be aware of when integrating different AI technologies?
Yeah. There's a whole list of pros and cons of why you should or should not AI. Happy to share some of those insights with anybody who wants to get a hold of me after this too. But on the concern side, there's ethical concerns around plagiarism, around ownership. You went to ChatGPT and got these questions. So are they your questions or are they the internet's
questions. They're somebody's questions.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So are you, Jeff, are you able to say, like, I gave Tim these questions, or do you have to go, here's a question I asked Tim, cite ChatGPT, right?
Yeah, so no, I spent 38 seconds on this, Tim, and it was
right, exactly. You. So yeah, I mean, you prompted it, but if you prompted a language processor like that to say, like, write you a blog post or something, and then you just pasted it on there and said, look at this great blog post I wrote. Did you write that? I don't know, right? So that's still a question. I would say compliance with any regulations that we may have, especially like in the content development side, that's an important one. If we're dealing with people who are on the international space, you know, if you remember when email marketing was just hitting its peak, and then the EU came in and set up GDPR and all those things. We don't have that here in the United States, so we can still spam the crap out of people. God bless America.
Unless you're in California. Okay.
California might as well be Europe. so there are things like that. They're going to get caught up, so you're going to have to keep an eye on that. There's a lot of bias and misinformation. I mean, there was I think it was just after we met, there was that whole Google image fiasco where they were like, Google, give me a picture of Vikings. And it was like Asian people and Indian people. They would just not like show a white person. What's going on? Yeah, I don't used to look that up. It was like, why won't it in any prompt? Like, people were prompting it for all kinds of things, and it just wouldn't, for the love of it, would not show like a white male, which, whatever, but like, people program that to do it that way. So there's that. And then the biggest one I think I'm most worried about is over reliance. And that is that we got this tool and it gave us these questions. It gave you the questions to ask me, and you're like, wow, that was easy. Maybe I'll do that for every single one of my guests. And then before you know it, you're not using your brain anymore.
Yeah.
Or ChatGPT goes down for a day, like the internet likes to do. And you're like, oh no, how am I supposed to write this thing that's due tomorrow? Right? Because you forgot. So that one, to me, I think is an important one. We have to use it to help speed things up for sure, but we can't make it our end all be all. We still have to keep mentally sharp and be able to develop our own stuff, because what is a writer then at the end of the day, right? You have a publication, you have a news site, right? What is the point if it's all just coming from a robot? So we have to still keep our humanity in it, I think, is an important piece.
One of the interesting things along those lines that one of our SEO people brought to my attention late last week is that there's been such a flood of AI content that's hit certain industries that when somebody will go to one of these large language models for a piece of content, the majority of what it's finding now is already AI content. Now, this isn't prevalent in every industry. So it literally is tripping over itself, Tim, because there's such a sameness to everything based on this flood of new content that's out. And I read something this morning that Google now is going to be putting new filters into its algorithms to try to sniff that out, because some people have been able to come in and copy a website, essentially, you know, rewrite the content. And because they're able to optimize that content better because it's being done by a machine, they can outrank an existing company in that space. So, you know, we're really out in front of our skis on a little bit of this, but I think that tends to be how a lot of these technologies come into society, is that we're like, okay, let's release it, and then we'll monitor, kind of, you know, depending on who's monitoring this, and hopefully nothing breaks.
Yep, exactly. That's the big thing to think about. The differentiation piece of it is one of my big considerations. And you kind of touched on that, which is, if all that AI content is generated and everybody looks the same, then what's keeping you different? Well, man, it could be you just writing your own dang article makes you so different. So the brand voice, the brand wash on all of those things is a really important piece.
Yeah. Okay. So last question from ChatGTP is, and I think this is very relevant for the travel business because, you know, there's definitely a David versus Goliath environment, especially like in the tour sector. You know, there's a few very large companies, legacy brands, very well funded. And then there's also, you know, a lot of small, I'd call them mom and pop companies, but let's just say for reference of this, you know, smaller niche type operators. So how can a small travel business or maybe even a startup leverage AI technologies to sort of level that playing field with some of the larger players in the industry?
That's a good question. It all depends, again, on your bandwidth and what you can commit yourself to, mm-hmm. right? So again, not biting off as more than you can chew. We mentioned that at the beginning of this conversation. But what you can do is you can use it, again, to speed up what you're doing, and you could use it to stem and develop maybe great pieces of content or a new looking website so much faster than you would have been able to do even just a year ago.
Good point.
So imagine you're like, oh, my website is just so old and bunk looking, and boy, this other bigger operator, it looks so great. And now you can utilize AI tools and actually a lot of website builders that you go to have some of this stuff built in. So you don't have to use separate tools and then like take it and paste it in. They have it built into these tools now, which is amazing. Images, text, copy, you name it. And you can spin up a whole website in a matter of minutes when maybe that was a huge, daunting and expensive task for you before. And that's just one example. Mm-hmm. So looking at like a few of, looking at the key problems that you have, and we talked about this in my session, we actually kind of went around the room and I said, okay, what are some of those challenges that you guys have that maybe AI can help you in? So what are those maybe top 3-5 key business challenges that you're facing at the moment? And then looking at those and then trying to map maybe an AI tool or function to that, that's going to help you solve those key problems for you in 2024. That's where I would start, as opposed to just going, let's make this thing for the sake of making it. Never do that, especially for the mom and pop thing, because you just don't have the time, the bandwidth, like you have to run your business. So do those ones that are going to help you knock out that to-do list on operational goals.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think the chat functions you see now on different sites, being able to answer simple questions, sort of get you a little bit closer to your customer. Those, you know, what time does the 9 o'clock tour depart? That doesn't have to be a phone call anymore. They can learn directly from your AI chatbot. You know, as long as there is a function that allows you to speak to a human, because I think that happens quite often now, is that companies use AI to eliminate personnel and figure that we can get all these questions answered through the bot. And maybe that works for 80% of them, but other times I just have something that maybe I can't even explain it to the machine. But if I'm talking to you, I'm like, yeah, it's the thingamajiggy over in the right-hand side. What do I do with that? And you can tell me what that thingamajiggy is.
So. Don't forget your humanity. Get people to humans when they need to get to them. Sure.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so I think you passed the ChatGTP test. Very good with that.
Yeah. Man versus machine. Let's go.
Yeah. Tell me about your book.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. My book is called The Marketing Starter: How an Entrepreneurial Spirit Will Make You a More Savvy Marketer. So it's specifically a marketing focused book, because again, my background is in marketing. But anyone who is either operating a business who has to dip into marketing from time to time, which we've talked a lot about in this show, you kind of have to manage your own marketing as much as you can, unless you go out and hire a fractional CMO like me. So before you're doing that, this is great. Or if you are a marketer or have a marketer in your life, they might love it. But what it's about is how you can take this entrepreneurial mindset or these entrepreneur superpowers, these startup guy superpowers, and apply them to the way that you do marketing to excel your career and achieve better outcomes. And so it kind of walks through a roadmap that I put together, both from my unique story of being let go 6 different times in my tenure, and figuring out how to start things and making a career of starting. And I found it to be a lot of fun and actually rewarding, even though maybe I never got to see things cross the finish line. You can still point to some of these great things that you helped a company achieve or help build before it was done. And there's a lot of great men and women in our country's history that helped to get things started, but maybe didn't quite finish them, including our great republic that we live in. It's not done, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So
we're still working on it.
How much of a labor was it to write the book?
I didn't have a natural language learning at that time.
Yeah,
it would have been a lot.
When I wrote my book, and then all of a sudden a year later it comes out, I'm like, this would have cut a lot of hours out.
How frustrating. Yeah, my book is actually about to celebrate its two-year birthday. So I started writing it actually in 2019 and then, kind of worked on it here, worked on it there, but got it out in 2022. It was a challenge, but, I kind of followed some rubrics that I researched and had word goals on a weekly basis. And I think of a great idea and I get up and jam on it. I would say that writing it was just half the challenge, right? You've done this. The other challenge is formatting and design and then getting it on KDP and all that stuff. And
I was lucky in that regard because I own a publishing company. So I have designers. Now, we don't do books, but we do magazines. So it was really just a different format. I have full-time editors, so they would make me sound much smarter than I am. So the writing part I got down and then they did the rest of it.
They took care of the rest.
I got really lucky there.
You had an advantage. Yeah. I had to do the whole thing.
So awesome. So how do people learn more about the book and yourself? So if you want to share your best content.
My site is just tnhines.com. That's my site. So I've got my speaking stuff there, my book there, my blog there, all the things about me you can find there. I'm on TN Hines at all the socials as well. So Instagram, LinkedIn, you name it, I'm there. So I would love to connect with you guys. Have you pick up a copy of the book. It's on Amazon. It's called The Marketing
Awesome.
Starter.
Yeah. And I noticed you didn't say TikTok. Are you now and kind of getting to the old chasing, get back to one thing we said about, chasing the shiny ball. I literally got an e-newsletter in this morning marketers should stop marketing on TikTok. I'm like, guys, we're a long way from TikTok being banned, but there's already the rules that are
set. As of today, this recording, the House has made one big step to getting it closer. Right now it's on the Senate floor as of when we're recording this, so I guess it depends on when this comes out, we'll see. I'm not on there. I'm not on TikTok or Snapchat. I try to stick mostly to the business ones,
platforms
the world app, right? And so that was a choice I made, right? I could be chasing every single social, there's 1,000 social media, I could be running on all of those, but I stick to the ones I know that work well and where I can manage them, because I'm one man band, and so I can't sit there social media-ing all day on every single channel. So,
I agree. There's only so many hours in the day. Well, Tim, I certainly appreciate your time and your expertise on some marketing tips and AI. Certainly a pleasure getting to know you, and best of luck into your next gig.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Get paid to travel the world with friends and family as the leader of your very own travel tribe. This book by travel industry publisher Jeff Gader will show you how. Order your copy of Traveling Tribes at leisuregrouptravel.com or at Amazon. Type in keyword Traveling Tribes.